Fighters, today I bring you an interview, a conversation I have with the most unique guest personally I've ever had with the trade that this dude happens to do. So I had a great time. I got some great ideas from this, and I want you to check out this interview with Mike Nunez of Nunez Vineyard Management in Napa Valley, California. Let's do this. Mike, welcome to the fight. What's up, buddy?
What's up, Tom? Thanks for having me. This is an honor to be on your show.
I'm fired up to talk to you, man. You got quite the unique business that we're going to get into here in a minute that I don't think we've ever had anyone like you on the show. and I'm going to give a hint. I'm looking at you on the screen right now, and behind you, I see bottles of wine that are on a shelf, reminiscent of the bottles of wine that ended up at my house not too long ago that you sent me. So give us the 30,000 foot view. Who the hell are you? What do you do? Where do you live? All that good stuff.
So Mike Nunez, owner of Nunez Vineyard Management here in the Napa Valley. We manage vineyards and install and maintain vineyards in Napa and Sonoma Valley. And we essentially get an empty piece of dirt, put in a vineyard, and then once it's put in, we maintain it. So after we do the construction aspect, we have reoccurring work of the maintenance. But then after the vineyard's producing grapes and the client says, now what do I do? I have a plan. We'll go as far as producing the grapes into wine or even finding a buyer for the grapes. So I also broker grapes for wineries. And if there's wineries that ask me, they might say they need an extra source of Cabernet or whatever, we'll find them the source. And that's a good way for me to get more clients. So,
So you kind of almost answered the first question I had for you. I was sitting here thinking, like, how the heck do you install a vineyard? Like, you have a piece of land,
right,
in a certain place that's a good place to grow grapes, I assume, right? Okay. I'm dumbing it down for all the Air Force veterans that are out there right now. So just kidding, guys. I love you too. Anyway, I'm such a smart ass. So when you install a vineyard, what do? Like, you plant, you build, like, give us a rundown of that, man, because this is pretty fascinating to me.
Yeah. So when we install a vineyard, we first have to take a soil sample, make sure that the soil is in sync with the vineyards, because it's not just putting a vine in the ground. It's actually making sure that everything's laid out precisely, because even being half an inch, quarter inch off, it'll really mess up the whole layout. Once we do the analysis, then we know exactly what type of grapevine rootstock to put in the ground, because there's some rootstocks that are good for drought conditions, others that are good for wet soils. So essentially there's an option for every type of soil and climate. So essentially here in the Napa Valley, we have the best climate and soil in the world to grow grapes. So
really,
we have going for us here in Napa Valley. And essentially, yesterday was the anniversary of 1976. There was that famous tasting that took place where the French competed against winemakers from the Napa Valley. And, you know, the French were expected to just beat the crap out of the Napa winemakers. And it was actually the Napa Valley winemakers that won that event, won that competition. Because of that competition that took place in 1976, that's the year I was born, that put Napa Valley on the map. So essentially, when you buy a bottle of wine from Napa Valley, that is really what made the name, the branded Napa Valley. And you could see that. They made a movie out of that event. It's called Bottle Shock. And it totally narrates that event that happened.
That's cool, man. So what's the for people that don't know anything about wine except how to drink it, how big is like the average vineyard?
So yeah, that's a really good question. So essentially, let me just go back on my clientele. My clientele can be anywhere from a half an acre, someone's backyard, to a 25 acre estate that a client might sell those grapes to a winery.
Okay. So
the clients that have like a half an acre to an acre in their backyard, I can also sell that to a winery, or I tend to coordinate that wine, that those grapes getting made into wine for their own consumption, giveaway as Christmas gifts, or just maybe building up their own brand. They want them like Reber Cabernet Sauvignon or Queen Sauvignon Blanc.
The Queen, there you go.
You know, something Shin Fu, the motive, whatever.
Oh, that's funny. Label man. Happens I to love be, that. So. I love that.
Yeah.
I'm asking for selfish reasons. Do you do whites and reds? Just
whites and reds, but here in Napa Valley, Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc. That's really, if you're in Napa Valley, you can sell 1 ton of Cabernet or Cabernet Franc for anywhere from 8,000 to 12,000 a ton. And out of 1 acre, you're getting anywhere from 4 to 6 tons to the acre. So
of grapes.
Of sales. Yeah. You're making that much in gross sales for 1 acre. So if I was to install a vineyard for you, Tom, 1 acre, and I'd say, yes, it's going to cost you $75,000 to install 1 acre in your backyard. But after year number four, you're going to start making anywhere from $50,000 to $40,000 of revenue per year after year number four. So that investment's eventually going to pay for itself. And then I could even coordinate a winery buying your fruit, or we can end up making it into wine, and then we could just build up your wine brand, whatever. There's sky's the limit with the way.
That's so cool. And like I said, at the top of this is like a really unique, you're a super unique guest here, and I'm you're definitely in a niche. So, which leads me to my next question. What's competition for you like out there?
Yeah, so there's a handful of companies that do small vineyards. Well, see, I do small and I do large vineyards, but there's few that do small vineyards. I do have some competition, but I would say a lot of them are not doing anything that I've learned here in this program. None of them are doing Shin Fu, you know, posting on social media. Lately, I've been posting quite a bit on social media. And other companies at best probably once every 2 weeks or once a month. But I mean, I'm trying to post something every day, at least every day, but just what the crew's doing. And essentially, I learned that from you guys. I mean, I mirror what all these other FWs in this group are doing. It's essentially, people like Michael Miller, he's a really good guy. Follow. Chris Corney, I really like what he does with his, you know, walking out in the landscaping world's pond builders, you know.
Yep.
Bob Hogan's another good guy I like to watch. And, you know, just, hey, we're out here doing this for the crew and doing this for the client. I think that's really cool. That's what clients like to eat up. They really eat up that stuff.
Where do you find your clients normally?
So a lot of it has been word of mouth, but I'm like, a lot of them live in San Francisco, San Jose, Silicon Valley. A lot of them want to get out of the city, so they have a escape out here in Napa Valley or in Sonoma Valley. And essentially, San Francisco is only, you know, 45 minutes from Sonoma and an hour drive from Napa Valley. So I'd say the majority are absentee owners. They don't actually live here. They come here just on the weekends, or probably some come here once a month, once every 2 months. And then the rest of the time, they rent their properties out as Airbnbs.
Gotcha.
So I would say a typical client would be someone that's a doctor, a lawyer, you know, probably someone like yourself, Steve Schinholzer, John Crotone, Tim Crotone. Typically FWs that just make a lot of money.
So I like this just shows you how I know nothing about the wine world, right? But like, so literally some executive could go, I want to buy a house with a couple acres, take half acre minimum to maybe an acre and go, I'm going to turn this into my own personal vineyard.
Correct.
That's fucking cool, man. Like I never even crossed my mind that, because when I think vineyard, I think like these big massive things that are, you know, like a monopoly on that industry.
Yes. So essentially a bottle of Cabernet might not just have Cabernet in it. It could also have another variety to tone it down and enhance the flavor. Like Cabernet, to legally call it Cabernet, has to have at least 75% of Cabernet in it. But you end up blending maybe a little bit of Merlot to kind of tone it down a little bit, adding some Petit Verdot to give it some spice, or these other Bordeaux varieties. So if we're planting 1 acre in your backyard, Tom, I'm going to take that 1 acre and sell it to a big winery. And that will be like the spice that that one Cabernet vineyard blend will need in order to have it enhanced. So, so I'd probably plant a Bordeaux variety, not necessarily a Cabernet or a Cabernet Franc, but it'd be a blender variety. And a lot of wineries are looking for vineyards that fit your portfolio, I should say.
Yeah. So that little niche person that goes and gets, you know, grows their own vineyard, like we're talking here, could literally be like the secret sauce to a bigger company's wine.
Correct.
Just because of where it's grown and things. I'm in an Airbnb right now in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And so this is probably not a good place to grow wine grapes.
My God. There's actually many places that grow good grapes all over. Every state in the U.S. has a vineyard, at least one vineyard. Every single There are certain areas, I believe New Mexico is rather hot, so you have to set up your trellis a certain way in order to withstand that heat. Texas is another state, you know, it's rather hot, but you would plant varieties that do really good in those hot climates. You know, when I'm in Nashville at the Nash Vegas event, I visited Arrington Vineyards, which is owned by country singer Kix Brooks.
Okay.
Only half an hour away from Nashville. And I mean, that's a badass winery. They don't claim to be Napa Valley, but you're going there for the experience. But wines, they're okay, but don't compare to Napa Valley, but you're going there for the experience. And I mean, I just was blown away by the hospitality that I was treated like a king there at the Arrington Vineyards. And, you know, just the beauty that's out there. It was a nice experience. And the thing about Nashville areas in the South, you have the humidity to deal with. We don't have the humidity here in Napa Valley or Sonoma. So you're going to have some issues with that humidity that's going to make the wine, you know, you're going to have to spray more often. So I did kind of taste that flavor that humidity tends to bring into the wine. I could pick that up, but maybe this might not be able to pick that up.
Sure. Yeah. So I want to kind of get into this because one of the things that we hear all the time, you've been in the group long enough to know in Battleground and stuff and our sales training stuff to know a lot of people, a lot of contractors like, oh, that won't work in my industry. And you're about as unique as they come. But before we get into that, one last question just on the background here, out of curiosity, how did you get into this?
So I was born and raised in St. Helena, California. St. Helena is in the heart of the Napa Valley. So essentially, St. Helena is one of the richest parts in California. I mean, it's just, you could grow the best grapes in probably in the world in St. Helena, Oakville, Rutherford. I grew up on a vineyard farm. The property that's right across the street from Robert Mondavi Winery, that's one of the best properties in the Napa Valley. It's now owned by Nickel Winery. They're a family out of Oklahoma, but they bought that property in 98. But I grew up there, and I mean, I was just around vineyards my whole life. Every day I'd step out of my house, I'd be looking at a grapevine. That 42-acre ranch, I'd walk barefoot down the vineyard rows, and you know, just fell in love with the industry, with the beauty. I mean, it's just beautiful walking here in Napa Valley. If you've ever been, it's just it's mesmerizing how pretty it is out here. But I essentially just wanted to do something that could I do to be in this area for the rest of my life? So you're either going to grow grapes, make wine, be in the hospitality business. That's what you're going to do if you want to live here. So that's how I got into this business. So I met up with one of my the father of one of my classmates from elementary school and junior high, and he offered me a job right out of high school. And you know, that's how I got started with the business. And while I was working there, I was also going to school, got my a minor in viticulture, and then I got my major in business management. So while I was going to school, I was also working full time, running vineyards, and then started my own business in 2010. And then here I am. I didn't know what I was doing in 2010, but that's in a nutshell, that's how it started.
Fighters, the profit you earn starts with the stories that you tell. most contractors will never build their empire because they are telling the wrong stories. That's why I want to invite you to the Mile High Profit Summit, September 14th through 16th, 2022 in Westminster, Colorado. Listen, the world's at it again. Gas is going up. Inflation's on the rise. Ukraine's under attack. Uncle Sam's got his hand out. Your material costs have never been higher. Employees are nowhere to be seen. It seems like your business can't catch a break. But you know what? You got to ask yourself, is that necessarily true? You got to ask yourself, who's writing your story? And that's some of the stuff that we're going to dig into this fall at Mile High Profit Summit. So head to thecontractorfight.com/mile-high-profit-summit. Check out what we have going on and sign up, because this thing is going to sell out quickly.
This, I'm making an assumption, which is never a good idea, but I'm imagining that this is a pretty recession-proof industry.
Well, what do people do in the recession? They drink.
They drink, right? Yeah, that's...
You know, it's going to be tough. So I remember when COVID hit, a lot of wineries started doing Zoom wine tastings. So they would get in a wine club and you would order, you know, 4 bottles a month or 4 bottles every Then you would do Zoom wine tastings, and just, you'd have a chef, you know, the winemaker, and then all these wine club members all over the Zoom. And then you'd say, hey, what do we taste from this variety here? And it's all, you know, whatever comes to mind. And, you know, it was just interesting.
Wow.
How they just adjusted. It's, you know, a lot of football analogies that you just go with, you have to audible to whatever the situation gives you at that given moment. You just have to audible. And essentially that's how it comes down to in a nutshell.
That's crazy, man. Well, I'm going to read something you typed in the questionnaire before you came on the show that we got a while back. We just threw it out to you. What one of the questions for those listening that we asked is, what topics would you like to discuss? And you typed Shinfu, mindset, marking up prices to get a 50% gross profit, and how other elements have changed me. I've increased my gross sales big time since joining the group. Which of those do you want to dig into?
Man, I'd like to talk about Shinfu, how Shinfu has changed my life. I mean, mindset is another big thing. And mindset is a big one, just from being in the group and just seeing how others, FWs in this group, deal with their issues. Wow. What if I try that? You know, whatever you'd like to do, Tom, I'm game.
So let's dig into what's the normal sales process look like in your industry, and how did you make the Shinfu your own to make it work? Because that's kind of where we were at the top of this, where people are like, oh, you can't do that in my industry, right? Those aren't the rules of our gig, right? Or our industry.
Right. At the end of the day, a business is a business. We all do what we need to do to close a sale and get work. So what I was doing before, people would call up, hey, I want to install a vineyard. Can you come out and give me a bid? I'd go out there like a dumbass and, you know, walk the vineyard and look all professional with my clipboard and say, oh, yeah, this is...
Did you wear pleated khakis?
Pleated khakis? No, I'm off.
Okay, good, good. Because I would have lost all respect at that point, but no, I'm just fucking with you, man.
I'm not a pleated khaki type of guy, I'll tell you that. I know.
But you had your clipboard, you're looking all professional.
All professional and you know, no logo on the truck, that was another thing I learned from this group is to, you know, better market. But yeah, I would tell them, I'll get you a type up a bid. Now that I have all the measurements, I'll type up a bid, get it to you. Then I would never hear a word from them. Hmm. I'd call them up and they would just ghost me. So that would be very common. So essentially, I just typed in one day, bidding, how to bid. And then your name came up on the Contractor Fight. I looked up a YouTube video. I think the first YouTube video I viewed, I'm like, man, this guy's a bad motherfucker. So I just kept on watching all the other videos. And then I'm like, man, this guy knows what he's talking about. But then I just started taking elements of the Shinfu, but I wasn't using them all. Mm-hmm. Just like a mixed martial artist, you have to know a little bit of, you have to know all the disciplines in martial arts. You can't just, you know, one roster get eaten up. You know, the first thing I was doing, I was just, you know, telling them, oh, okay, you want a vineyard? It's going to cost you this much. Is that going to work for you? Yeah, that sounds good. So I'd come on down and meet them. And then I'd get out there and, oh, we'll get back to you. Mm. I have to use all the steps of the shim or else it doesn't
work. Yeah.
So I learned that really quick.
Why did you join? Why did, like, initially, you know, because, you know, there's a lot of free content out there and stuff. I'm always curious what was the event or process or whatever behind that?
Yeah, I joined just, I was running out of time. I mean, essentially, I wasn't making it to my kids' events, you know, school events, things like that. And, you know, I would tell my wife, hey, I'll be home by, you know, 5 o'clock, and I'd be home at 6, and then she'd get all off. And then essentially joining the group gave me back all my time that I was losing. I was just so much time just to become a better business. Yeah, better in business and, you know, just not be ghosted anymore. That's essentially why I joined. And then I just kept on absorbing all the material that we got, that I got in the YouTube videos. And I'm like, hey, I just got to take it to the next level and join.
That's cool, man. So one of the things you typed in here, you said you've increased your sales since joining. And I'm curious, like, we're talking about the sales process and saving your time and stuff, but what about being part of this increased your sales? Like what do you attribute that to?
So essentially I was charging a lot of my work at like 30%. Mm-hmm. And you guys were always preaching 50%. And so just making that adjustment right there has really increased my sales. And then clients that were not willing to pay the 50%, we just parted ways. I mean, beginning of this year, I increased my rates even more. Mm-hmm. There's two clients that we parted ways because they just said it's not going to be feasible for us. And I'm like, okay, no harm done. And feel that the door's always open if you want to make a change. But, you know, they didn't burn any bridges.
Yeah.
Essentially, all my clients, I would say, except for those two, everyone else was okay with my price increase. So it's just, this group has me the balls I needed to do that price increase. And that's essentially what it comes down to. It's just having the confidence behind being able to do that price increase.
You know, it's funny. There's in business and anything, there's strategy, tactics, you know, there's math involved, like marketing messages, all this stuff, sales tactics and strategies and word tracks and role plays and all these things. But I hear this a lot. This is why I'm kind of bringing it up, that you're like, you know, I finally had the balls to charge what I was worth and this and that, you know, so I wasn't stealing from my family anymore. And I hear that a lot. And that's the power of a community. You know, like if you just take, and this isn't a pitch for somebody to join, or I'm just saying in general, like you want to be part of a strong community, because sometimes when you're a little chicken shit, you know, the group is there and you feel that power of the group. It's similar to, somebody joins a gym, right? They join a CrossFit gym or some sort of gym or a martial arts club or whatever. And just the association with other people that are working on their health and their fighting skills or their business chops or whatever it might be, often is enough to give you that push to grow a pair.
You're totally right on that. And also hearing examples of what other guys are going through and how they're dealing with it. Mm-hmm. The stories in this group are very powerful. I mean, just some, you know, James Miller comes to mind. I mean, just
right.
His story. I mean, that's, you know, I got to spend, you know, when I attended the Nash Vegas event, I got to spend 1 hour sitting down with James Miller and Dan Rankin. I mean, what better two people to be the epitome of this group? You know, those two guys are, you know, that was gold right there. Having that conversation, hearing their story and how they've had their struggles in life and how they've dealt with it and persevered, you know, that was awesome to hear those conversations.
So how would you say that you personally have grown in the last year or two?
You know, now if someone calls me on the phone, I act like I don't necessarily want the job, you know, because right now, I'm pretty busy. I mean, I can take more work, but I'm booked out until October. So I'm not going to go out there to go visit anyone unless I know I'm going to get the job. So being able to pre-qualify a client over the phone is just a saver, big time. I mean, I feel I have still a lot to go to learn. I mean, pretty high up there on the Shinfu, but I still feel that the way I have persevered and improved, and this group has really helped me, is just saving so much time. I mean, right now, if I want to go on my kids' field trips for school, I can do that. I mean, before I wasn't even that. If I want to, you know, take a day off to have lunch with my wife and take the rest of the day off, I can do that. I mean, I have so much free time now. It's just unbelievable how much free time I have been able to get. And that's all due to this group, because I would be still in my old ways if it wasn't for this group. And I would just say time management, mindset has been a game changer for me.
I want to ask you, because I don't know all the details. I just know what a little bit that you typed in. Sounds like not too long ago you had a pretty challenging situation in the business.
Yeah.
And I'm curious share that with us a little bit, and what that entailed, and how'd you fight your way through it, man?
So essentially, California is just the worst state to do business. So it's essentially, if you're in the NFL and you're playing football, probably the worst stadium to play football is probably Buffalo, I would think, or probably Denver for the high altitude. So, you know, essentially there's things that are called wage and hour lawsuits out here. So essentially, if you don't document the employee's breaks and lunches, and there's ever a dispute, it's essentially a technicality lawsuit. So essentially that lawsuit cost us $1 million. It was $375 for our lawyer fees, and the rest were settlement payouts to employees from the past 4 years. And essentially we had to pay, you know, they were all technicality lawsuits. It wasn't essentially that we didn't give breaks, we didn't give lunches. It was that they weren't properly documented. So a lot of these contractors out here have, you know, documentation type of software, and people do it. Some people don't. I would advise you to do it. If you ever need to fire an employee, you know, tread lightly, because that was a guy that we needed to get rid of, and essentially he turned on us. We persevered. I essentially put my brother, who's my partner in the company, I said, you deal with this and I'm going to run the company. I'm going to run the operations.
Attaboy, get that off your back. Huh?
Yeah, I got that off my back. I think if I would have taken that on, I don't know what would have happened. But
yeah,
the way I was able to focus on running the business, and it was 2 years of hell, but we are through it.
What year was that?
2016, and we ended it in 2018.
So it was $375,000 in lawyer fees.
Yes.
And then $6.25 in payouts and settlements and things like that. Right. So what was going through your mind when you heard that this was happening?
You know, how can California be so, I would say, cruel to business owners? Because it's really a employee state. It's not an employer state.
Right.
And I know, you know, it does have its challenges living in California, but I mean, it's just there are trade-offs, but I mean, it's just that one business thing. So we are just so anal when it comes to details and documentation and all that. And I have, my brother is a full-time HR person in our company.
Okay.
And that's the way we have to do it. I mean, it's just that way. I strictly concentrate on marketing and sales for our company, getting work for the guys, keeping the guys busy. And that's how we stay busy.
Well, dude, this is also why you got to charge more, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
You
know,
and I don't care what state you're in, man. We spend, and I just admittedly, so I don't spend enough time talking about this, you know, in the content I create. But like, we work so hard to score points, get leads, get sales, close jobs, you know, because it's oxygen, right? But then, you know, which is offense, you're putting points on the board, you know, you're scoring points. It's really easy to blow off the defensive side of things. And that's, this is an example of that. And unfortunately, you're $1 million, you know, less wealthy due to this, right? So it's, And this is also not your situation, but this focus on offense and defense is why last year we brought Carolyn Cromines onto the coaching team here in the contractor fight, part of Battleground and stuff. And if you guys don't know who she is, we've interviewed her on the show, and she owns the Cromines Law Firm, and she's out of Houston, and another thing called the Subcontractor Institute Online. So just Google it, Cromines, Cromeens. But she's a construction attorney, and she's been a great asset to the group, just given some perspective here and there. Now, it's not like everyone's getting free legal services, but she's there for you to, you know, run something by. And then if you need your contracts updated or whatever, then you stroke a check and you pay her so that you're protected, right? So you have your employee handbooks in place, or what each state requires you and stuff. So I would encourage anybody listening, like, play defense. Like, it's because literally you started in 2010, bust your ass for 6 years building your business, and then take a torpedo. So I'm curious, would you say, and I guess you already said this, you had your brother focused on that, so you weren't distracted, and you focused on scoring points.
Right.
And just that, is that what you say would, like, saved you guys?
I would think so, because I just was not, you know, I'd say that really saved us. The mindset, we're, you know, my brother's a former Marine, and I mean, you know, the mindset and I think we're both well-rounded as far as dealing with what we need to deal with, get what we need to get done. Mm-hmm. And for one person to take both of those issues on, I think...
I can't imagine that. Yeah.
It's, but anyway, we prevailed, and we're good. And that guy that did this to us, no one in the Napa Valley will hire him. You know, you're like, wow, you had it great there with Mike. What happened? You know, and, you know, it's just, so he kind of shot himself in the foot.
They ever call for reference checks on him?
Never.
No. Yeah. Word gets around, especially in a niche like yours, right?
Exactly.
So, well, dude, I'm sorry that you had to go through that, but, you know, this is why they call wisdom, wisdom, right? Like, this is why when somebody older and more mature gives you advice and says, hey, if I were you, what I've learned through the years, that when somebody more mature and older than me, or at least has different experiences than me, they can be younger for all I care, if they've been down a road I've never been down, and they go, hey, if I were you, my ears perk way up and I start fucking taking notes, you know, because you don't get wisdom without getting your teeth kicked in a little bit. So
exactly. No, that's totally right on. Also, you know, what I really like about this group that I have really learned that I had no idea was learning the DISC profile. That's a game changer. I mean, I learned my wife's DISC profile and you know, myself, I feel that in certain times of the year, I'm a different DISC profile. I would say, you know, I'm a high I, 85% I, but during harvest, I would say I'm more of a 50% D and a 50% C, because I really have to have the details, but I also have to have the kind of like the, let's just FN do it. You know?
The drive, man. Yeah.
The drive.
It's go time.
But learning the DISC profiles from your, what your clients have, you can kind of your DISC profile to close a sale, because a D dealing with the C's, there's going to be some clash. So, that's one thing I'm glad I joined to learn that aspect.
That's good shit, man. Yeah. Well, dude, what's something that we haven't talked about that you want to share or talk about before we get out of here?
Yeah, other just motives of why people want to put in a vineyard. Let me just say, you know, one of the things would be, you know, to have a vineyard as a landscape aspect. Others would be selling fruit as a profit. But one is fire breaks. One thing we're really dealing with out in California are wildfires. And I'm actually reaching out to more realtors and builders, and they have hired us to install vineyards in areas that are very prone to fires. And then having, like, if you're having your house in a forested area, likely you're going to have a fire someday, because you have all that fuel that hasn't been cleaned up. So what we'll do is plant a vineyard that horseshoes around a house, and then that acts as a good fire break. So that's keeping us busy as well. It's just another thing why people don't always install vineyards to sell grapes or to make the wine. It's, you know, other aspects, you know. So, yeah.
That's great. Yeah. What I like about that is you're going, a lot of people, self-included, have done this. We get our business going and then we look to other interests, other businesses, and we go wide. And one of the things that my coach is working on with me a lot over the last several months has been going deep. Like, right. Here's your thing, the vineyard management and building that you do. But now you have another layer to that with the fire breaks and stuff is just my point here. Like, I encourage everybody listening. I hear this a lot, man, where people are like, oh, I dominate my town already. Everybody knows who I am. So I'm going to expand and put a location, you know, half an hour away in another town. And 10 out of 10 times that I've had those conversations with people, and we look into their business and their market share and their revenue and their profit and their potential client base in their current town, 100% of the time, they're not even close to tapping into that original core, you know, base. So I like what you're doing there. So I'm on your website right now, and I got one more question, then I'll ask you kind of where to people can find you and learn more. If somebody wants to work for you or something or hire you, shit, a lot of people that, you know, could do both, but, we get a lot of, I don't want to say a lot. I don't want to mislead. We get a fair amount of people that go, I'll never put pricing on my website. Right. And I know yours, you know, small vineyard development, you got 50 to 60 grand per acre when you plant to 5 acres, 1 to 5 acres. You've got the next medium is 45 to 55 an acre, you know, 5 to 10 acres. And then you got 40 to 50 grand for large vineyard when you plant 10 acres plus. So I'm curious, what do you share with somebody? And I have no idea what Mike's answer is going to be here, guys, because for all I know, you could be like, this fucking sucks. But I'm curious, what's been your experience since you put pricing on your website? What's that done to your sales process and your brand and things like that?
So no one else in my industry does that. So that has steered the tire kickers away from me. Guys that are waste my time and ask me, hey, can I come out there and give them a bid? I don't get those calls anymore. They see my prices on my website and they're like, okay, this guy's going to charge this. Probably not for us.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. This is pretty reasonable. So I'll give this guy a call. So it essentially does the selling for me. And, you know, it's just something that I feel is a necessary element for your business. I was one of those contractors that was very skeptical about putting my prices on the website. Mm-hmm. And won't I scare away customers that way? No, you're actually going to get the customers you want because they'll know firsthand what you charge. And that's a time saver right there. I mean, I felt that once I started doing that, I got fewer phone calls, but the phone calls that I did get are the ones that people that want to move forward because they expect. So that, I would say that's a necessary element for your website if you're a contractor, hands down.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're in a day and age where people have that idiot box we carry around and speak into and type into all day, and you can find out anything you want there. And my pet peeve is in any industry when you know, with the trades, you go to Google, you ask how much does something cost, and you get Angie's List and Home Advisor and all these other third-party sites that are answering the questions, and you know damn well the people that answer the questions are these interns that are fresh out of college, don't know shit about shit. Anyway, don't get me started on that. I don't want to go on a rant here. Yep. But anyway, well, dude, this has been cool for me. I got some ideas. As soon as we stop the recording here, I'm going to ask you some other questions about wine and me.
Yeah.
And because I got some ideas now, of course.
Yeah.
But this is cool shit, man. This is such a unique trade. It's certainly not unique in your area because you grew up with it, right? But I think for most of us, like I would never go, hey, I'm going to start a business. I think it'll be this one, right? That would never cross my mind. That's why I've enjoyed this conversation, man. And I appreciate, I just want to give you props for the example you set in Battleground for all the other members and stuff, man. You just keep showing up. You keep hitting the rock and pounding away and you keep stepping on the grapes, man. I guess that's the analogy we could use here today. So
the reason that happens is because I'm surrounded by people that are doing it. You guys actually set the tone. You guys set the bar. So it's, I have to maintain that bar. I have a target. So without this community, I wouldn't be anywhere near where I'm at.
Love it, man. So. Love it. Well, I really appreciate that, man. I appreciate you being part of what we got going on. And yeah. So dude, if somebody wants to reach out to you, where do they find you?
NunezVineyard.com. I also have a Facebook page, Nunez Vineyard Management. So I can be reached there, and yeah, check it out.
Yeah, we'll get the website and all that in the show notes as always. And dude, I super appreciate you taking the time to do this. And guys, what you all don't know listening to this is I had to move the time back a few hours today because I'm at a horse show in Santa Fe with the Queen, and things just ran a little bit longer. And Mike was flexible to make it work. So I appreciate you, man.
For sure.
So, all no right, buddy.
Problem. Thank you, Tom. This was an honor. Thank you.
Awesome. Good chatting with you. Guys, check out his website and what he's got going on. Learn some lessons, man, and attack the stuff that you got to do. Give us a rating, give us a review, and we'll catch you guys next time on The Fight.